I want to hear Dustin tell me if there's a story there.
See, I can definitely tell you a story there.
This is a podcast with the most Tucker. This is Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Adam Camilleri.
Hi, everybody.
Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
And special guest, Dustin Henshaw. Dustin,
hello. Thanks for having me on here.
Oh, we want to talk about Gene Sealer cults.
Oh, I thought I was coming on here to talk about stones.
Yeah, well, seriously, that's how you infiltrate, is you think one way and then it's the cults.
It's all about the cults, man.
I don't want to get on too many watch lists. We're not talking about joining a cult.
Wow.
We are?
We're talking about being a cult.
Yeah, that's just not what I'm here for.
That was the only reason those two joined this episode.
It's true.
I prefer to call it a spicy union.
Spicy union.
Yeah.
Wow. That's an awesome thing for sure.
The PR will go down a lot better if we don't call it a cult. So if we really want followers, I think we've got to change the name up.
Okay. I don't know, it sounds like a sandwich you get at KFC or something.
I'm down spicy for KFC union. Spicy union.
It's just like one small slice of bacon sandwiched between two like crispy chicken thighs.
you've been in America. You know what we have.
I know what's up. It totally is. Just like sriracha mayo, the absolute Bojangles.
Don't even lie that you weren't excited about it. You were so excited about it too.
Yeah, I was gonna say first
red. We went to NOLA, and I did commentary there. And on the way back with the boys, we drove back to Florida, and we went through this. It was like a roadhouse. And I swear to all the almighty, I walked in there and it just felt like Willy Wonka's like chocolate factory to me. There was a whole aisle of jerky. There was like, I just walked up and just grabbed a huge sausage on a stick and like got a burger that was nothing but like, it was like 80% brisket, 10% gravy, 10% bread. And I was like, you know what? There are some things about America that aren't great, but the good bits are pretty good.
Somebody take that man to there. A state fair.
Seriously. I was just sitting there just like
deep fried Oreos.
Yeah, that was amazing.
This does sound delicious. We should probably start another show just to
that. Yeah, that's right. Well, I got to come up to Atlanta and you got to show me. We got to go like for a taco crawl.
Dude, oh my gosh. That sounds like that and burgers. We'll have like burgers for breakfast and tacos for dinner or vice versa. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, that'll be good. We can play Warhammer in the middle.
You have to throw that in.
So this with the Gene Sealer cults, I mean, I know it's one of those factions, you know, has kind of taken or been on the back burner for a lot of players, haven't seen a huge presence in tournaments, you know, but now brand new book, brand new opportunities. And then, you know, there have been folks that have been holding it down, still playing, still finding ways to be successful. Want to speak to that a little bit and then see how, you know, maybe that has influenced what you're looking for in this new book that's coming out. And so, Dustin, you know, again, thanks again for joining us. I know this is one of your favorite factions.
Oh, yes, it is absolutely my favorite faction. Like, I've been a Nid player since when I started playing Warhammer, but Gene Sealer cults have always been the real passion of mine. So when they got their full codex, I just jumped all over it. They're just so tricksy. And I love books that are so complicated that it's really hard to get into. But if you figure out the juice in it, then it's so rewarding to win with it or just do well with it even. So I have been playing GSC even through all the quote unquote dark times they've been having, being in the F tier, D tier, and all these tier lists that everybody's been making. I've still been pretty successful with them when I run them. And it's just a matter of finding exactly what they're good at. And the funny part was the most successful I became with it when I went pure GSC was trying to kind of mimic Dark Eldar, like the Drakari build. It was MSU at the time, not Thick City, to be clear. So the MSU,
being able to trade a lot of units, you control areas of the board,
and just having waves of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It was in transports too, like in boxes. So it was pure MSU in transports. It was 5-man Ocklite squads with rock cutters, popper princes, so they were rerolling. So I didn't need to pay points for any icons of rerolling, and these 5-man squads that were like 70 points were suddenly, or sorry, 60 points were suddenly like they were killing off Marine squads like it was nothing. So it was really easy to trade, just get points. It wasn't an army that would table you most of the time, although sometimes it could if you weren't careful. But it was an army that would win on points because it was full of OBSEC, full of guns, full of close combat. That was just really, really efficient trading. So it was actually and the hardest matchup was still Drukhari, but not because it was Drukhari, because they traded the same as me. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit different playing into them. You needed to get the jump on, because I still had flamers and stuff. So it was just a matter of getting the right trades at the right times at the right places and getting those points. Like I'd be tabled a lot of the games, but I'd win hard on points. So that's how I like to play it. And it was a lot of custom cult with the Pauper Prince, because I like the Mining Laser with rerolling hits as well. Now,
yes. Go ahead. So with this book, there's all kind of new tricks to do: crossfire, exposing other units. Mm-hmm. There's pages and pages of relics. You know, it may be even difficult to even know where to start. So yeah. I guess let's kind of go into it. Any of the actual special factions, the cults, coming out and appealing to you?
Well, immediately when you look at it, you have to see Twisted Helix for what it is, because Twisted Helix is just on the surface, and even when you go deep, it is just the best one to get into. If you were to start GSC, you go Twisted Helix, because everything in the book, basically all the close combat, which is what it's good at, get better, like way better. The Gene Stealers, the pure strain Gene Stealers, are now really what they should be, and they get the cult creed. So now these things get plus one strength, plus one movement, and the psychic power to explode on six. It's just, again, pound for pound, it makes the book so much better. It's so much more efficient.
It's the total Ultramarines of the book. If you're going to start,
absolutely.
And that'd be my advice, having looked it over and had played a couple of games into it. If you're going to start anywhere, if you're picking up your brand, if you're starting a brand new spicy union, try choose the Helix first, because legit, you get plus one strength, plus one move, and baby transhuman army wide. The only thing that you would need to get is some kind of shooting buff, and it would be one of the most holistic chapters, factions, sub factions we have ever seen. It's already on the cusp there. Like, so what? So I get to take this one thing. I get to move better, hit better, live better.
So each of the cults,
they do get it. They have crossfire, right?
So. Yeah, have a cult creed, and the cult creed is experimental subjects. Add one to the strength characteristic of models with this creed. Add 1 inch to the move characteristics of models with this creed. Each time an attack is made against a unit with this creed, an unmodified wound roll of 1-2 always fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or the attacker may have.
Now, I want to point something out about that. Cannot be wounded on a 1 or a 2. Usually, when we've seen that in previous, well, I play Black Templars, and that's one of the things that's one of the things that I use most games. Now, on a toughness 4 chassis, that's only -1 to wound against things that are strength 5 with +1 to wound, or strength 8 or better. But on a toughness 3 chassis, GSE can be, there is plenty of toughness 4 and some toughness 5 there, but there can be a huge density of toughness 3. That rule becomes phenomenal, because that is everything strength 4 or better with +1, or strength 6 or better, which turns out to be like most of the best weapons in the game. So it does come up. It comes up all the time.
Yeah, it's something that people are going to overlook a lot. Now, if you take Twisted Helix, chances are you're not going to have that many T3 guys now that Ocolites are T4, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
So like, it's not going to get much value, but there's a lot of things out there that give +1 to wound. So you forget about that stuff. And again, this is in addition to the +1 strength, +1 move. So it's just a bonus. Like, oh, by the way, you still only wound me on 3. So
just as a cherry, just as a little cherry up at the end. Yeah,
exactly. I guarantee you, most people even forget this in a lot of games, because they get it, the strength and move, but they're going to get, I roll a 2. I guess you wound me. Wait, no, you don't.
Yeah, it's spot on. Well, so one thing I'd like to say about the cult creeds, I think that GW have knocked it out of the park. You can make a case for all 5 of them, mm-hmm. and then they have one of the most exciting and interesting build your own creed mechanics that I've ever seen. Probably the best in the game.
You know, I did find myself flipping cult to cult, like, oh, that's good. Okay, I can see that. And then go to the next one, like, ooh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Well, they're really well put together, and none of them are over the top. Like, no one stands out from the other. And I think that's exactly what you want. You find your flavor, you find the one that makes sense to you for your build, or the one you identify with, and they're all going to be worth playing into. It's really, really awesome.
Oh, for sure. Like these like you said, they knocked it out of the park with this. They're all awesome. They all feel very fluffy to what they're supposed to be in terms of the actual lore of the cult itself. And they're just in the game. They all have different builds you could do with them. Now, the custom creeds, oh my God, I love how they did this. So like, you get basically 4 points, and then all the different custom creeds you can buy are worth a certain number of points, like between 4 to 1. But
it's the myriad cults rule in the book. This has allowed you to pick your own traits.
Pick your own. Exactly. Now, the only one that's 4, you basically, they added this one that's worth 4, that just you pick one of the other cult creeds and you just take all their stuff and you name it whatever you want. So it's for all those fluff players that want to play Twisted Helix, but don't want to play Twisted Helix.
They don't want to paint the Twisted Helix.
They don't want to paint the Twisted
Helix. And I understand Helix. That. I can relate to.
I get that. So that makes sense. Now, the custom stuff in there, when you get the 4 points, you get to spend on your custom creeds. It is so cool. I love how they did this because it's just, it's make your own ice cream sundae. You get to just pick the little base and then whatever little toppings you want on top of it. I will say, though, they're not quite on with how many points some things should be worth, because some of the expensive ones are not good and some of the cheap ones are too good. So there's a little bit of nuances in there that I'm sure a lot of people – it's perspective, yeah. So there's a lot of people that are really looking at that. It's like, oh my God, this one's only worth 1. I would take it every time. And meanwhile, there's another one that's worth 3. It's like, I would never take this.
It's perfectly okay for things to be like good and powerful. Like that's,
oh, absolutely.
You know, and it is an option. So it's cool that stuff is attainable and then people can actually play with it and switch it out even from game to game, maybe influence what units one might take.
Yeah, exactly. And all of those can influence everything you're taking. So if you like any unit in the codex, you can basically pick a cult or make a cult that will use it well. And I love that.
Nice. Going over to the stratagems, is there anything that jumps out at you? Anything that you're just kind of itching to use or spring on unsuspecting you know, Imperial regulars?
There is definitely one that's, if you are reading this book, or even if you're playing against it, you need to be ready for it. The hint for everybody is make sure that anything is within 6 inches of another unit when you're fighting Genesis or cult. That's... Because if not, the new Return of the Shadows is bonkers.
So use the stratagem in your movement phase as 1 CP. When a Gene Stealer Cult infantry unit from your army is selected to move, or in your fight phase after a Gene Stealer Cult infantry unit from your army has resolved all attacks, all of its attacks, but before it makes a consolidation move, that the unit is more than 6 inches away from any enemy units, or remove it from the battlefield in the reinforcement steps in your next movement phase, set the unit back up on the battlefield anywhere more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. If the battle ends and that unit is not on the battlefield, it is destroyed.
Yeah. So before, this was just in your movement phase, you could put something back into deep shrink, which is already awesome. But now you can do that after your unit kills something, and then it can just immediately go back into deep strike. Because that was one of the really scary things before. Because like that's what was all about trading. Before, you traded something because you knew, okay, I'm gonna kill these guys. If I can't wrap something, they're dead. They're just that we can't take a hit. They're dead. But now you kill it, go into deep strike, and do it again next turn.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Now there is some other little bits and pieces here that are actually quite interesting. So Gene Stealer cults don't deep strike conventionally or arrive from reserve. They arrive from underground, essentially having dug tunnels under the battlefield because they've been planning for this uprising for XYZ.
Money, equipment to work.
Exactly right. Yeah, well, that's souped up better than Custodes money equipment.
Black and Decker.
Yeah. And but when they arrive, if they would like to declare a charge, you arrive 8 inches away. If you would not like to declare a charge, but you're free to shoot, you can arrive 6 inches away from your opponent. Those are two very big differences that make this book operate quite uniquely and that people should be aware of. Like, I'm already being like, well, I used to just take in curses in my battalions. Going to be infiltrators
again. Trying to get that 12-inch explosion.
Exactly right. I'm going to find those 15 points because I can't trust that my backfield is going to be safe anymore. Because it's much harder to zone out 8 inches than 9 inches. And then in addition, if I'm sloppy and I'm just like touching the side of an objective, technically with a 40 mil coin in the middle, they can arrive 6 inches away on the other side of that objective and touch it as well. And so there's a lot of other ways to get caught out now with this book. So if you are there and you're playing them for the first time, just upgrade one of your squads to infiltrators. It might just make your life a little bit easier.
Yeah, don't just tow in objectives against Don't do it.
So the stratagems are, you know, obviously one of the things that they kind of is the, what is it, the gas in the army, you know? So
yeah, I guess we got a lot of actually, there's like, what, 4 pages of strats in this?
There are, there are 4 pages of stratagems.
It's insane how many strats we got. I love it. We have an auto advance 6 now in addition to the advance and charge strat. And now the metamorphs can do it too. That was one thing that was a little sad before that the metamorphs didn't get it. By
the
way,
brought me the gene stealers. The pure strains.
The pure strains who now have a 4-up invuln and a 2-up weapon skill.
Yeah. 8-inch move.
8-inch move.
Can advance and charge.
Can advance and charge on, like, just because they're still gene stealers, and they went down a point.
Yep.
Yeah, gene stealers.
Yeah, you see those in a lot of lists.
Well, you know, that's one of those things. Gene stealers, I mean, I've got this, what is it, a instinctual memory of just being torn apart by gene stealers for years and years and years. We might be back to that.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be showing up in a lot of these. They're definitely best in Twisted Helix. To be honest, I don't see them running in too many other cults like en masse, just because the Twisted Helix makes them so much more efficient with the plus one strength and the plus one move. So, like, and they're still really good in any other cult. But now the one thing you need to remember is that they're only a 10-man instead of a 20-man. But they lost the plus one attack because they're 10 or more, but they just got a base. So they have just four attacks base instead. So these gene stealers
does not seem
it is definitely not. So the 10 men of these pure strength gene stealers is 40 attacks hitting on twos. It's insane for 140 points.
I've seen a lot of folks also be excited about the Nexos.
The Nexos. I can see people being excited about the Nexos. He's kind of cool.
I am of the opinion that every list starts with the Nexos.
Wow. So, okay, go ahead, Adam.
Strong.
He's really good.
Yeah. Being able to kind of get back command points. Is that where we're at?
There's got to be another reason that you think it's an auto include. Come on.
So for me, so this is an interesting thing. So sometimes we've seen mechanics like, protocols, tactical doctrines, devastated doctrines, things of that ilk be very hard to interact with. And you only get a sprinkle of it. You only get a little bit of it. It was only a little bit impactful. I thought Crossfire, when I first heard about it, was an incredible, amazing thing that I wish everybody had, that you had to actually work and to get your core mechanic to happen. It wasn't just an automatic thing you had. Like a Doctrine Imperia or a tactical doctrine. And I was really happy about that because I thought I'd love to see that wholesale everybody. Like, you don't just get to have your cake and eat it too. You have to work for it. But then I read the book and realized it's not very hard to get Crossfire tokens, to get exposed, to get any of that. No. They actually have it prolifically. I played against Gene Steel Cult now twice, and every time they targeted or shot at one of my models, they didn't really, at least
you were crossfired and exposed.
Exactly right. And they didn't have to work for it very much. Usually the third target they wanted to, or even a fourth target, they would have to work for it, but you can always get the one or two you really want. I found that both, I thought it was really good. I'm really happy for them, but I thought this was going to be a mechanic they had to plan around, plan 1,000 years in the making. They kind of just kind of get it on tap.
I think there was a lot of people that worried about that too. They all thought like, oh, this is going to be way too hard to do. Like, nah, man, read the book. It's actually really easy to do.
It's really
spread
easy
those
to
tokens
do.
Around.
Yeah, and they're so pivotal. I mean, like, this is what Markalites wish they were.
Yeah, for sure. So you like the Nexus because it points at something and gives it a Crossfire token? Is that the reason?
Yes, and it also, and you can upgrade it to make it do that twice.
Nexus has, we'll talk about how many points he is, but he also has a relic, the cranial inlay. Nexus models only while the bearer is on the battlefield. Each time you spend a command point to use a stratagem, you can roll 1d6 on a 5+, the command point is refunded. Second bullet point, the bearer can use its strategic coordination ability one additional time per turn. Strategic coordination is in your command phase, select one friendly cult core unit on the battlefield, then select one of the following friendly cult character models within 6 inches of this model. Primaris Jackal, Primus Jackal Offerus, Alphus Clanvus. Until the start of your next command phase, that cult core unit is considered to be within range of that cult character's model's aura abilities and can be selected for any of that cult character model's abilities that instruct you to select a friendly unit within range of the specified range.
Yeah. So basically, if the Nexus is beside like a Primus or something, you can give that plus one to wound to something, anything on the battlefield, anywhere on the battlefield.
Anything, anywhere on the battlefield. Yeah. It's really powerful.
Yeah, it's two units good.
That's right. Two if you take that as well, which I mean, you might as well. If you're taking a Nexus, you should take that.
You can obviously see how this is a good thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, I mean, like the Crossfire thing is cool and everything. It's the strategic coordination that really makes it shine, I think, because as somebody who brings a lot of Goliaths, and if you're playing GSC, you should be bringing at least a few Goliaths, a single autocannon hit triggers Crossfire.
Ooh, that's strong. Nexus is 50 points.
Nexus is 50 points, yes.
Well, in addition to that, I mean, a couple of lists that I played against, they had like five mans here and there with a couple of hand flamers on each, and then you just you put them in reserve and choose to deep strike them 6 inches away. You just got to roll a 5 on 2d6 on your flamers, and then if you do roll a 4, you know what, you got a couple of pistols to try and get a hit, crossfire. And then you start thinking there's crossfires, and yeah.
And you get crossfire, yeah. It's so easy to do. Like, because the crossfire, to clear that up, you get the crossfire token if you get 5 hits, or if you get 1 hit with a weapon that's damaged 2 or higher. So that's why I like the Goliaths.
Yeah.
Because literally one autocannon hit and you have crossfire.
Yeah, it's the fact that they got -1 to damage on the Goliaths and on the vehicles. I'm getting a bit tired of -1 damage. getting a bit old at this point.
So construction. So each time an attack is allocated, this model subtract 1 from the damage characteristic of that attack to a minimum of 1. That's on the Goliath Rock Grinder.
Because my Torox Prime, my Lehman Russ is built too good, it doesn't have -1 damage.
That's
right?
100% correct. That's exactly right. You built it too good. It's not rugged. So we can afford to have pieces fall off. That doesn't matter to us.
By the state of the 41st, by the, you know, the standards of the 41st millennium, Imperial tanks, like Imperial Guard tanks, are like the utter garbage. You remember when I was growing up, I used to think army grade stuff meant good. And I've since been informed by a bunch of people who work in the military that army grade means not to be trusted. Like, it means the cheapest person to make it.
That's to the lowest bidder.
Exactly right. The lowest, the person who would do it for the cheapest.
Red will be back next week.
To confirm or deny
all of this
by wily statements while he wasn't here.
No, had plenty of folks also reach out, talking about they want those rock grinders in their list now as well.
Mm-hmm. Rock grinders are so good now because they also have the -1 damage. They got upgraded to the 12-inch move, like as well as the Goliaths, instead of a 10-inch they had before. They now hit on 3s instead of 4s. They are only strength 8 now, but hitting on 3s instead of 4s and getting cult creeds and having -1 damage, pretty good. And they have crossfire as well. So those mining lasers or the seismic cannons that you had on them before, they're actually going to do work now because they're mostly going to hit on 3s and get +1 to wound.
They do a pretty good job of running over people as well.
They do a really good job of running over people because if they're Papa Prince, they get +1 to hit. So they're going to hit on 2s now. And they're strength 8, -2, 2 damage with 6 attacks,
+6
2 on the charge.
Attacks.
Yep. 6 attacks.
That's like Baneblade close combat ability.
Well, they are dozer blades. They're supposed to, and they have strat to make it +1 damage. You know, they're pretty cool. I did find it funny that we have a strat to make our vehicles act at top bracket, and we have a single chassis in the entire book that can use it, but I'm not saying I wouldn't use it because I use it all the time. It's just funny to me.
There's a joke about this book that I think someone told me there was 21 data sheets in this book and something like 13 of them are characters.
Is that correct? that sounds accurate.
I mean, it's kind of nuts how many characters there are in the elite slots. But that's another thing that they've done. They've really considered that, like they did with, I suppose, Death Guard's a comparable one. They've got like 3 or 4 elite character options, and GSC is no exception. But they've built in a mechanic where you get to take one for, is it every other character you take? Is every elite like HQ slot character you get to take an elite slot for free, Dustin?
For every HQ you take, you can take a character as an unaligned.
Yeah, exactly right. So you can take a bunch of these elite slot stuff because you do actually have quite a few elite slot options for units now. It's interesting. So there's Aberrants, Metamorphs and Pure Strain Gene Stealers, like your 3 squad options, right? And then the rest are kind of just characters.
The rest are characters, yeah. The Abominate is now an elite choice as well. He's not an HQ anymore, which I'm both happy and sad about. Happy because I didn't have HQ slots for him, but sad because I have slots for him now that I could make him unaligned and I can't give him Warlord trait anymore because it was fun giving him Warlord traits.
I do like all the characters, though. It lends to itself to the personalities, you know, of the Spicy Union.
Yes, the Spicy Union, exactly.
I'm just look. We're talking about being exposed and cults. I just, you know, I'm just trying to keep us, you know.
Well, yeah, we're just running around pulling down people's pants to do more wounds to them. That's exactly what this is all based on.
Yeah, exactly right. We found this silly tweet you put out when you were 18. No, easy to wound. Bang. What I've been really impressed with Twisted Helix is Hybrid Metamorphs. See, they were a much maligned unit. They didn't really have a place for a long time in 7th and 8th edition. They found some good use in being a trading unit in 9th because you had the Lash Whips, and when you went in, you killed something, then someone went into you, and you got to kill them too because you fought on death.
Were they the ones that had all the hand flamers as well?
Yeah. Because their hand flamers were a point cheaper than anyone else's hand flamers before, so they were very efficient hand flamer units. But now it's the same point cost. But they got to keep the fight on death as just a base rule, which is awesome. And their close combat weapon has just been changed to the, what's it called, like the metamorph mutation, something like that?
Plus one strength, neg 3 AP, damage 1. And that it's a savage amalgam is the rule that allows them to fight when destroyed by a melee attack.
Yeah, so
if it is not fought, if it can't have already fought.
Which was the same before. It was the same before. So that's not too sad. Now being -3 on the other hand, just base, which is by the way is also with the pure strain. They're not plus one strength, but they are -3 base now, which is incredible. Because now they're just all acid maws basically.
What's amazing is when those metamorphs are as twisted helix, they get to that beautiful strength 6, which lets you do so much heavy lifting into things like racks, various space marines, all the toughness 5 bits and pieces that are out. Into grotesques, you're just fine. Talos are only toughness 6 when they're not around a homunculus. Yeah. There's a lot of great things for these things to hunt in the competitive game at the moment. In any game at the moment, I think they're my second most beloved unit right now in the new book. Second.
So the
Nexos. No. The Nexos, I look at him and I'm like, yes, you do exactly what I want you to do, my boy. Well done.
Worth carrying around that desk or whatever he's got with him.
Yeah. He's carries around that holo desk.
He's the DJ.
DJ Nexos. Somebody has DJ to do Nexus. That. The Jackals, the bikers, Adeline Jackals. I have just been absolutely blown away by how good and amazing that they feel. They feel like
I tried to tell y'all. Y'all were like, no.
Jack of all trades.
No.
They're one of the best jack of all trades in the game at the moment, I think, for their points, for the durability, for their ability to be anywhere on the board that you need them to be, have decent shooting profiles into whichever way you want to build them. And look, they're not great in combat, but they can do a lot of things by taking up decent portions of the board. They've got a big footprint unit, and they're not very expensive at all. They're 12 points. Amazing.
They were 12 points before. Now they're just better because of all the stuff they get. Now, I am sad because I have 45, but they changed the max unit size to 10.
Yes, aww. Which I'm happy about.
So I have
15. Justin, I'm gonna need some of those jackals.
Yeah. I like them.
I'm just on loan. You can have them back
on loan. Okay.
10th edition, you know, next edition.
Right. Next edition when they go back to 15, they can use them all again.
So before we close out the metamorphs, they are 12 points a model. I compare everything to at least all that stuff. Yeah, I'm comparing it to the Gene Stealer points. The Pure Strain are 14 points a model.
Yeah, that is correct. And so they're one less attack. They're 3 attacks instead of 4, and they're plus one. They're an extra strength, and they fight in death. So and there's two move slower. So I mean they're very comparable for 2 points cheaper, like, but they don't advance and charge immediately.
They hit a little bit harder with a few less attack. They're actually very good
and can't get guns. I mean the Gene Stealers don't have any guns.
True. So. Well they do have guns, yes. And they can get flamers too, but that makes them more points than the Pure Strains. But they're really good. Like I've always been a fan of them. I use at least one squad of them, if not two, in my lists before.
You keep in mind, you kind of keep your opponents honest with their deployment and how much space they leave you to deploy your stuff. It feels like it's one of those kind of skill check units.
It definitely is. And it was another one that a lot of people didn't realize the wording on their fight and death, because you put them on the outside of an objective. So you wouldn't be able to touch the objective when you fight them. So you come in to fight them. They don't get removed when they die. So you can't pile in or consolidate onto the objective until after they've fought, and then you can't do it. So they actually block people off of objectives.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So like when they die, it says keep them there. So they do their fighting, they do their pile-ins and it consolidates. And if you're still blocking it, they can't get on the objective, because then you get the fight and they've already piled it and consolidated. So they can't get through you.
Man, Jesus, they're called jerks.
Right?
Yep. It's all on their terms.
Yes, yeah, if this model has not fought this phase, do not remove it from play.
Yep.
Man.
That's right.
I know I jumped in there, but before we close that out, talking about the jackals.
Jackals. Yeah, there's a trick here that I feel it is our duty to tell people.
You're going to tell them everything I'm going to be doing to these people. Yep. Come on.
Yeah, correct. I'm spilling the beans, Dustin. It's time. It's your expose.
I'll find more. Don't worry.
The Spicy Union expose. On 60 Minutes.
I feel exposed. So
there is a very reliable first turn charge by a unit of Pure Strain Gene Stealers. Because you place them in a blip at the start of the game, and then you get take an upgrade that I believe lets them get a lets them move.
It's a normal move. So basically, if they're Twisted Helix, they move 9.
Yeah, is it just a normal move with no, because a lot of times they've been adding that normal move up to this many inches or whatever.
Nope, it's just normal move.
Yeah, and so you'll get out of that blip in this, at the start of your, you know, the end, at the start of your movement phase, and then you will move another 9 inches, and then you will advance, and you have a way to automatically advance 6 inches in the book. So what's that? That's 18 plus 6. You're going to go 24 inches and then declare a charge. So you will be on your opponent's deployment line in Dawn of War. So it's pretty unavoidable. That's only 10. It's only a 10 inch deep. And, you know, if you go any size, I think that's going to be, even to the back of your board edge, only going to be a 9 inch charge. So yeah. they're going to come back. You're going to have to screen.
If you have a crossfire token, they can just deny you Overwatch too.
Exactly right. That's another way that Nexus becomes. That's what I mean. That Nexus is auto take, because Overwatch and or spec scan, in addition, are two things you actually want to consider taking decent portions of. I'm actually looking at aggressors again all of a sudden. I haven't looked at them in a very long time, but they will make Gene Steel Cult shake in their boots from the option of an all spec scan.
Yeah, all spec scan is always still a scary thing for us. We don't like that. We don't have a way to turn that off. I don't like it.
Yeah, you don't like really, especially like being shot by bolters either.
Nope. Bolters are pretty efficient, although less efficient than they used to be, because now we're T4 with our acolytes.
Yeah, a bunch more T4.
Nice. Spicy. I love that. But yeah, no, you're right. That's like, I'll be playing a game on my stream tomorrow or whenever you're listening to this, on the Wednesday this week, and I'm trying to put every single, I think, I'm going to say obvious, even though it's not obvious to everybody, I get that, but kind of like, these are the obvious things that most Gene Steeler lists could have, and I put them all to one list so you see them all at once. Do they work well together? Probably not, but this way, I'm kind of teaching the masses as well, both the people that are playing them and playing against them, because there's a lot.
That sounds
cool. There's so many.
Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back. Still diagnosing this book. There's lots of things to uncover and talk about, and we're going to hit some of the highlights, continue to, you know, again, talk about some of those units that you'll probably see in list out there, at least in the initial go, until people really get their hands on it and dig super deep. See you in a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Thanks for checking out our sponsors. Just going to jump right in. There's, again, to mention, there's a bunch in this book. I want to talk about the Sanctus. That's the assassin looking dude.
Yeah, let's talk about the Sanctus. Now, we could talk about the close combat version of him, who was probably the preferred version for a lot of Ninth, I think. I think the close combat version was the one that was more used, but let's talk about what he is now. So now his sniper rifle. Now he has a two up ballistic skill, which I'm not entirely sure, just for posterity's sake, I guess, because his sniper rifle, strength 5, -3, 2 damage. You can give him the gift from beyond and make it a 3 damage sniper rifle instead. Obviously, it ignores lookout sir rolls, so it's a sniper rifle, and it does a mortal wound on a 4 up. Now he has a special rule. Now I want to look up give my book here so I get
soul
the exact
sight. Name.
Soul sight, thank you. He doesn't miss.
The attack automatically hits the target.
Literally doesn't miss. It is impossible for it to miss. I'm -4. I don't care. I hit you. I just hit you. So this is now a sniper that does not miss. A sniper that could potentially do 4 wounds. This is a sniper that could potentially one-shot 4 wound characters.
Yeah, be careful out there, man. Warhammer 40,000 is dangerous.
It is dangerous out there in the 40th millennium, man. It is so dangerous. Now, he also has a strat that goes along with him, too. So because of these, he used to be able to just auto-peril any psychers. So that has now become a strat. It's not an auto anymore, though. So you have to pay 1 CP if you take any kind of wounds. So obviously, the mortal wound counts for this as well, just like it did before. So if you take any kind of wounds from this gun, now the G-Circle player rolls 3d6, and you need to get, I believe it's over, not equal to or over, but I think it's over the leadership. If you get over the leadership and they're a psyker, they auto peril. And all their auras are turned off for that turn.
Man, see you later, Magnus. And
yeah. Oh.
I'm joking about one-shotting Magnus, but I mean, that's a lot of damage. That's a lot of damage to dish out for something you can't miss.
Right. Yeah, for just that 70-point unit that just auto hits and can wound you, do these perils to you, turn off your auras. He's oh yeah, and he counts as crossfire as well when he fires.
So if he has a sniper rifle, he counts as having crossfire.
So he doesn't have the crossfire keyword, but if he has the sniper rifle, he gains it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got a blitz skill of 2. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, he got a blitz skill of 2+. but
doesn't matter.
Doesn't
matter. And then each time the model makes an attack with the with that weapon, the target is treated as being exposed if it has the crossfire.
So you also have plus one to wound when you're shooting it. So your strength five, plus one to wound against everything that you shoot.
It's
I don't mind that.
It is not
conservatively. I just want to say I don't mind that.
there's another character. There's good old Jesse James.
You want to go jump right over to Jesse James already, eh? Okay, let's go. Let's talk about Jesse James.
I am a big fan. I'm a big fan for one rule in particular, despite him being an absolute... Well, he's a killing machine. He's got... how many attacks? Is it nine? Is it six shots?
It's six, but any hits gets an extra shot. And he hits on twos.
And he hits on twos. So up to 12 shots. Strength 5, minus 1, 1 damage. 18-inch range, so much better range than he had before. So there's a lot more flexibility there. If he kills a unit... If he kills a model, he becomes a captain. He has a captain aura from him. That's the rule that I love.
He had that before too.
Yeah, I thought you had to kill a unit before. I didn't think you had to kill a model.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it was.
So I'll just read it now. It's heroic deeds, heroic inspiration. If this model destroys any enemy models in your shooting phase until the end of the phase, it is a heroic inspiration. If this model is a heroic inspiration, while a friendly cult core unit is within 6 inches of this model, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, reroll hit rolls of one.
He's a great buffer when you don't want to buy a Primus, who's very good, but when you don't want to buy a Primus, or when you want to redeploy your castle or your portions of your backfield, and you know you're going to be coming up elsewhere, just having him there with some neophytes, some acolytes, whatever you've got, just to add that little bit of extra punch and then buff everybody around him, it's really, really, really cool. And he has some relic upgrades that make him quite scary. I was playing knights in the Gene Stealer cult, and I had a Kel'Moth pop up, and in two turns just did every time it shot, just did six wounds to a knight, just quarter kill the knight with like a cost nothing character. Just
How you doing?
Bang bang. Six wounds.
He's actually great for that. The relic you're talking about is the worm ammo, something like that, the void worm ammo, something like that. But it makes the guns strength 6, negative 3, 3 damage. And all three of them do get changed because it specifies that. So he gets three of those shots, and they do get the roll again until you get to shoot again with those ones. Now They do lose the lookout, sir. They're not snipers like his regular gun is.
It's the worm tooth rounds.
Worm tooth rounds. There it is. Like worm somewhere in there. So it was. They don't have the lookout, sir. So they are basically infantry killers or vehicle. They shoot everything but characters unless the characters are the closest model, right?
Yeah. So the gunslinger rule is that each time this model makes a ranged attack, if the hit is scored after the model makes the rest of its ranged attacks, this model can make one additional ranged attack against the same target using the same weapon. The additional ranged attacks cannot generate any further additional ranged attacks. The Liberator auto stub has the one that gets you a roll of a 6, inflicts one mortal wound. The worm tooth rounds and the Liberator worm tooth round does not get that ability.
Yeah, correct. So it would be busted if it did. That would be dumb.
So you're telling me this is an 80 point, I believe he's an 80 point character, master confirmed point. I'm pretty sure he's 80 points.
Yep.
80 point character who can have with a relic has 3 shots, strength 6, minus 3, 3 damage, which every hit scores another hit. So it can have 6 of those shots. Yep. If you are within 12 inches and that target has a crossfire marker and is exposed, you have plus one hit, plus one wound, and you already hit on twos. But it's heavy.
Ignore cover if you're within 12.
I was about to say, and you ignore cover within 12 inches.
Now,
I have Lehman Russes that are like 3-4 times the cost of this guy, and this guy makes him look like a punk.
You're missing the best part of this guy.
He has hypersensory abilities too.
You're missing the best rule of this guy.
Shoot, move.
Yeah. He's got move, shoot, move, and it specifies you can do it after he comes in from deep strike.
So this is the great thing, because you have obscuring terrain pieces, right? So you just pop up in the screw.
You should have obscuring terrain.
Shoot, bounce out of the obscuring piece of terrain. No retaliation. Sorry, you thought you were going to do something about good old Jesse James, fastest pistol in the cult, Spicer Union. And he just pops up, just smashes a pound of flesh and just pops straight back out. Like, I pay 85 points for a unit of 3 eliminators. And one of them has to take a crap gun in order to do the same thing these guys does. 5 points more, and once again, this guy makes him look like a punk. It's so good.
You have to give him a relic to do that. I mean, come on.
And did I forget that when he kills something, he becomes a freaking captain, which I have to pay a CP for on a dreadnought?
Well, then you got to get in the range of something, kill that, then jump over to get the captain bonus to
that's,
the units.
That's sad to say. You can combo it up really nice, because you think it's only he deploys and it's 6 inches from him. No, it's 6 inches from where he's going to be after he moves, after he shoots. So he can get an angle, pop a unit, and then jump over to give the buffs. You can line up some really cool plays.
Yeah, I love him. He's awesome. The characters in GSC are just so fun.
There's lots of things to take. It's
so hard to pick between them.
Yeah, I'm going to run out of points just with the characters.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I think that's part of the issue, right? Right now, there's only a couple of units that I think you just don't want to take in every list. Like every list, I want to have one Sanctus, one Kalamorph, like maybe a couple of Rock Riders, three units of, I'm not sure what size, but three units of Jackals, Acolytes, Neophytes, Metamorphs. I want to take all of it. The only ones that I'm finding hard to make a case for, because I just think they're the only ones you really have to go out of your way to make good, are Aberrants. And I want to hear Dustin tell me if there's a story there.
See, I can definitely tell you a story there. So this is the funny part. It's irony right now, because everybody's been wanting Aberrants to drop. Everybody's been wanting Aberrants to get better. And they did. Aberrants dropped in points and they 100% got better. So now they're still their flat two attacks. They don't have a different weapon profile now. So they're all basically running around with just Thunder Hammers. And you know, everybody's complaining that they're better than
just Thunder Hammers.
They're the Thunder Hammers. Like, strength 8, -2, 3 damage.
That's the Aberrant Hypermorph's heavy power weapon can be replaced by one heavy improvised weapon.
The stop sign can be added.
You can mix it up a little bit.
Oh yeah, sure, a little bit. But comparatively, I don't think you ever would. I mean, I can't find a reason to do it. I've thought of it. I can't think of one. But yeah, you can definitely do that. The stop sign is no longer the greatest weapon in the 40th millennium, which is a little sad, but
it's the basic weapon that's the best.
The basic weapon now. The one they picked up from their mining equipment. They picked it up at Black & Decker, all these things that they're killing Imperium with. So they gain a wound, so they're 3 wounds now. They lost stock Feel No Pain. You can easily give it back to them with Biophagus. So like it's not like it's gone, but they don't start with it anymore. And they're still -1 damage with 3 wounds. So they are a lot better than they used to be. However, are they better than like an Acolyte squad with rock cutters or rock saws or rock drills that are maxed out at a 10 or 10 man squad with 4 of them? They're 20 points cheaper. Or if you want to have 6 of them with a 15 man squad, they're 30 points more. Like, is in their OBSEC? Is it better than the Aberrants? The only real, because Aberrants are, they're still good. I just don't find a reason to take them above the other stuff we have that is cheaper, more efficient. Yeah, they die quicker, but to be completely honest, as durable as the Aberrants are, unless you take like 10 mans and you put them in Bladed Cog, give them a 5-up Invul, give them a 5-up Feel No Pain, and you make them specifically to be durable, they're just not as efficient point-wise, and they're just not worth taking because there's so many little things we can take to trade. But that's my style of playing. Maybe some people, they prefer the chonky muscle beach. I don't know. What do you think, Adam? Did you think of any reason to take them?
Honestly, no. I found that you can make troop choices hit just as hard for less points with more flexibility. Yep. I felt like you had to go too far out of your way, out of the conventional, what I feel like is the good, I get lots of everything build to get far less stuff, but have a slightly better unit, you know? I mean, admittedly, like, you can make one unit of Aberrants absolutely ridiculous. Like,
yes.
You can make one unit of Aberrants so terrifying, or for the same point.
But you have to kind of invest a little more into it, I think.
You do.
Exactly right. Hit the nail on the head, Paul. I could take that same amount of Metamorphs, Gene Stealers, and Acolytes, and between the three units, they will target more things better, as in more different things they'll be able to go into, and it'll have much more of a board presence, and rather than not having, like, one huge unit and, like, 4 characters that need to stick to that unit.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say the obvious thing that I'm sure most people are thinking when they're listening to this right now is that they are a 5-man Aberrant squad is the perfect unit to put into a Rock Grinder because they don't have guns, so they don't need an open top vehicle, and it only has a 6-man capacity. So they are the perfect squad to throw into a Rock Grinders. Personally, I still run 5-man Acolytes in there, but that's me because it's OBSEC, and that's what I did before too. But again, they are the most efficient squad to put into a Rock Grinder because that single Rock Grinder now is terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. If you kill it, 5 Aberrants pop out. If you don't kill it, 5 Aberrants are still popping out.
And I think you can like sabotage. You can make it explode also when
if you give it the 5-point upgrade for the demo charges, they have an auto explode as well. Yes.
Yeah, I see people theory crafting some list where they are. They just like drive them up, grind you up when you finally get it down, and then it does some mortal wounds to repay you for your effort, and then you've got to deal with all these.
I was doing that with all my trucks before, and that was when the demo charge add-on was 10 points. Now it's only 5? Absolutely. I'm doing that. For mortal wounds whenever I need them? Beautiful.
Love yeah, you better believe it's going to be a thing. So another one that I'm finding is a little bit awkward. I still think they've got quite a bit of play, but I'm not quite sure what the list that they fit in looks like. It's the Ridge Runners. They do have some spicy stratagem support, if you know off the top of your head, Dustin.
I do actually know most of the stratagem support that they have. So they have we have Fire and Fade with both the Ridge Runners and the Jackals. So they can both use the Fire and Fade. 2 points after they shoot, they can move 7 inches, normal move basically. So they can keep one of them safe if you're keeping a big three man in the back line or something. Obviously, I'd be using a lot more on the Jackals, but if you're taking Ridge Runners, you're probably going to want to keep them safe with this kind of thing. You have some good obscuring terrain. Another one they have, I'm pretty sure the stipulation on this one, and this is actually a stipulation on a lot of the strats and abilities that are in, and even the secondaries that are in the GSC codex, that they have to be exposed, but they have to be exposed as it's explained in the actual rules section, not by a special ability. So like the Alphys giving them, making them exposed doesn't count for this kind of thing. So you actually have to have a unit on the other side of them intersecting.
A full-on exposed.
Like you have to have some, you have to have their pants pulled down and somebody has to be behind them taking a picture of their butt. That's how far it has to be for a lot of these things. And the Ridge Runners, if they get that, then I think it's a 1 CP strat that they reroll all hits, which is really good because they're not core. So they're not going to get the rerolls ones from like the Primus and stuff generally. So yeah. that helps them a lot. That gives them that that good reroll. And they did change a little bit in terms of their flare launchers now. 6-up invuln, and it's -2 to charge if they're not currently in combat. So they're a little hard to get to as well. And they don't have that -1 damage or 6-up feel no pain anymore. So they gained 6-up invuln, lost 6-up feel no pain. Yeah. To be honest, when I look at them, I'm actually looking at the Survey Auger now, which is before was a 6-inch increase to the range. Now it's a 12-inch increase to range. And it doesn't, the points aren't different either.
Yeah, each time a range attack made by the bear targets an enemy unit within 24 inches, the target does not receive benefits of cover against the attack. That's the Survey Auger.
Oh, sorry. It was the other one then. The Spotter.
Yeah, Spotter at 12 inches to the range and characteristic of the range weapon of the bear is
good. That's it. So there's a Spotter I was thinking of. Survey Auger, yeah, that was the ignore cover one. That one you don't want to be 24 inches of things if you can avoid it. So I like the 12-inch range one, in my opinion. The 6-up invuln is nice, but if it's between that or the 12-inch extra range, I think that's better. They did get a change to their missile launchers, which is actually really good. So their mining lasers are the same. They're still D3 shots, strength 9, -3, D6 damage. So they're the same as they were before. Their missile launchers now are now like an Achilles missile launcher.
Achilles missile launcher, yep.
Yep, strength 6, -3, flat 3 damage, 3 shots. That's juicy.
Yeah,
when you have crossfire. Yeah, that's juicy.
80 points a model.
So. 80 points a model. Still have 8 wounds. Oh, they got toughness 6 now, too. They're not T5 anymore. So the game is toughness as well.
Yeah, exactly so right.
They're still really good. It's just I'm finding it hard to fit them in lists right now.
Oh, because there's so much else to choose from. And
once you
have all the special characters and then...
They are still really good fire spells. Yeah, that's the thing. Like I usually prefer my neophytes with guns a lot of the time. It's just a matter of if I'm not taking a custom creed, so they're not taking minuses to shoot with their big weapons, then I would consider like Ridge Runners to be in the back line, so I have some really good shooting units. Maybe just one big three-man squad, fire and fade them whenever I need to save them. Like I can see one squad. I don't see 9 of them as much anymore.
Nah, I can't really see a case for 9 of them. It sounds like you can make one squad be pretty solid with not a crazy amount of investment. But yeah, 3 squads are also they're on the same basis as buggies. Like 3 squads,
they are massive.
Just takes up so much board.
I like the scout move. Frustrating. I like the shooting. Yep. I like the base size. They have a lot going for them.
Now, I will say too, for those of you, and I'm gonna, this is in part of my list. One of the things I'm showcasing on the stream is that. There's one upgrade for units you can give to the Ridge Runners, and that's the come in from reserve on turn one, basically. They count as being a turn ahead. So basically you can keep them off the board and they still get to shoot turn one.
Yeah, that's very cool. So I love this.
You'll be very safe with them.
Oh, that's nice. Mm.
I want to talk about a bit of the glow up that happened with Neophytes.
Sure.
So Neophytes is essentially your Guardsman-esque equivalent.
Yes.
And for a lot of people in a lot of lists, they were literally just used as guardsmen. They were spicy guardsmen.
These neophyte hybrids. These are your absolute rank and file. These stand there with their auto guns or whatever they got.
They can now be, so they could always be taken in 20 minutes, and you can actually put a lot of different weapons on these guys. I'm starting to, well, I played into a gentleman who was taking a unit of 20, and they could take 8 special weapons in a unit of 20. That was 4 seismic cannons and 4 grenade launchers. When you add it all up, all the buffs you can place in this guy, you add a Primus, and then you just add a Nexus and then an ability to get exposed. When these guys have +1 to hit, +1 to wound, and all those weapons, they become like, they're not quite as good as Admech Rangers and Vanguard, but they're not as expensive, and they do a real good job, like, of most things, especially clearing objectives. Yeah. I was playing Black Templars into them, and I lost 2 of these squads. Picked up a whole Crusader brick.
You got mining laser down.
Yeah, it was the seismic cannons, bro. They have a 1 CP strat to make their seismic cannons have an extra damage.
Yep.
And it's very powerful. Very powerful.
Seismic cannon has the long wave, heavy 6, strength 4, neg 1 AP, 1 damage, or the short wave, heavy 3, strength 6, neg 2, 2 damage. And yeah, just to clarify that, for every 10 models, up to 2 neophytes can have their autogun replaced with a heavy stubber, mining laser, or seismic cannon. And then there's another bullet point for every 10 models in this unit, up to 2 neophyte hybrids can have their autogun replaced with a flamer, grenade launcher, or whatever.
Yeah. I really hope Guardsmen get to have 8 special weapons in it. I want my conscripts with 4 las cannons and 4 grenade laser guns. That's kind of what this feels like. And it's like, wow.
Look, they got rules in the Imperium. You can't have those kind of shenanigans.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They only have so many guns to hand out. It's not like they're stealing them all over the place.
Yeah, spicy unions have no rules. That's why.
Yeah. We found these while we were mining for stuff.
I just love that I've got like, you just got guardsmen going into like disperse these spicy unions, and the spicy unions have got like just stuff that was meant to like explode a rock.
What is that?
And just like cutting sways through them, and like a sergeant turns to a colonel and just like, what the man? Like, the best weapon I've got is literally a flashlight that I get to turn the brightness up on. And this guy has a mining laser that is going to kill a tank this turn.
He's got a permit.
why did nobody think to use these things as weapons instead of to kill rocks? It's the same thing as chaos. Like, why did nobody in all the years you've been fighting think to pick up a sniper rifle on the ground thinking it might be useful?
Exactly right. Exactly. Or a mortar.
Or a mortar.
You got to go to Forge World to get like a rapier battery that has a thud gun on it. And it's just like,
Interestingly enough, nothing we've talked about so far has been from the HQ section. What leads this army?
Patriarchs lead it, as well as Primus, Magus, the Acolyte banner. Oh, we haven't talked about the Icon Ward. Oh my God. We haven't done that. We need to talk about this guy.
So I'm happy Red's not here, because I could imagine the single tear rolling down his cheek. The fact that Gene Steel Occult like just get to res like Necrons do, like Necrons just ain't special. Unpack it for us, Dustin.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. So first of all, the icons have changed for the Acolyte squads and the Neophyte squads. Now it's 20 points instead of 10. But now in the command phase. Specify. I gotta say that again. In your command phase, so before you score objectives, just to point that out, you now respawn D3 slain units. If it's a neophyte squad, it's D6. And that's just so like neophytes, the acolyte hybrids, and the metamorphs. I believe the only things that can take these icons. However, the HQ, the icon ward, in your command phase, any core unit. Bikes our core that is within 6 inches of him can respawn as if they had an icon. Now, it does stack with the icon was if they already have them, but it doesn't go higher than what they would normally spawn. So like if you could spawn D6 from the neophytes, you couldn't spawn more than 6 between the two of them, but you can add them together to get to 6. But this thing means you could have a 10-man bike squad with 2 quads, and 2 quads are dead. You roll a 2 on your res, and now you got 8 wounds back.
Mm-hmm. So you guys remember when...
in your command phase.
You guys remember when we had this issue with the Invader ATVs?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, there's going to... Yeah, we need to...
But then it's different, because if you had like 6 quads dead and 3 different squads, they're all in range, they'd all come back.
So you're saying this needs worse? This is worse correction. Cool. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think the ATVs are worse than those bikes, are they?
No. Legitimately, the ATVs are worse. Sorry, are better.
Yeah. This.
But the fact is, you get multiple back a turn, and then, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So yeah, Necron players. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel right now?
I feel great.
I feel great. Well,
they feel better than they did before, because before they didn't have a chance to raise anything of consequence. Like now you can just I can't remember if it's the Technomancer or Chronomancer, or one of the Mancers can just be like, I regrow a Wraith, I regrow an XYZ, because they got the core keyword now. So that's better. But still, they're just like, well, all these points I'm paying for this mechanic feels like no one else is paying points for this mechanic.
Yeah. So it's something that people are just going to need to keep an eye on. If there's either an icon ward, or if the neophytes and trucks, Ocolites and trucks have icons on them. It's like, killed that truck. Ah, no, two died the explosion. All right, cool. You're not on the objective. Wow, what an idiot. You didn't do that. Yeah. Be aware.
He's talking command about phase. Bringing models back onto the objectives when you weren't on them. It's a real thing. It's a total real thing. It's a
real thing. And it's an awesome thing. I'm so excited.
Be aware. I'm glad we're talking about this. This is one of the things, definitely got to be aware. Try to win scoring points. The Patriarch. We've seen this get play mostly, well, I think not always on the table, but you think it's going to be a mainstay?
Oh, yeah, I think so. The great thing about both the Magus and the Patriarch now is that they both naturally cast two. So before, we only got one cast, and the Magus had a CP upgrade to give him a second cast. Or if you take familiars, you can use them once a game to get a second cast kind of thing. It was such a pain.
It's two psychic powers that can try to manifest each turn.
It can actually manifest two. They always knew two, but they can only ever cast one. Now they both cast two naturally, which is so much better. Because now we actually don't have to worry as much about it. We can actually bring more of a psychic strength that we needed before.
The Patriarch has like a billion attacks.
He's pretty good. He's like a demon prince now. So he lost his strength. He's down to 5 strength instead of 6. It's still T5, still 6 attacks, I believe. But he gained a wound.
And that's before you put cult rules and stuff on him.
Yes, he does get cult rules now, which he didn't get before. So this is another important thing to remember. So he has all the cult rules. So if you make him a Twisted Helix, which I think, if you're Twisted Helix, you're definitely taking a Patriarch, because you can beef him up even more. Yeah. Like, actually, a lot more.
One thing I would like to point out that we haven't mentioned yet is a very specific wording in here that was echoed. I think we first saw it in the Grey Knight book, or possibly the T-Sons book. When you take a cult creed, your psychers automatically know the power of that cult creed. It doesn't replace one. They know that in addition. This is a huge deal. It means that the cult creed psychic power can just be a flex psychic power. It can just be a sprinkle of some goodness you might need.
You're not wasting a slot to still be
exactly. It's just exactly glorious. Right. I think this is a magnificent thing. I want to see it adopted across the board, because it's such a quality of life improvement.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Like, Thousand Suns got it too, so I think that's something that they're going to do regularly now, and I just love that.
Maybe it's something that things are more tied to the warp, and so they get that. I could see that, because I know we haven't really, really focused on it, but like Tyranids, and which these all have the keyword Tyranids, are very much tied to the warp.
Oh yes, very much so. Which is actually interesting to see too, because you don't lose much from mixing, although you do lose Crossfire. Now, is Crossfire really good? Oh yeah.
And then by proxy, we'd lose Exposed is...
Yes, exactly. So that's part of the Crossfire. So you lose Crossfire and Exposed. So you're basically not going to have an army-wide +1 to hit, +1 to wound, and ignore cover within 12 inches. Plus, you have to remember, too, a lot of the strats that they have require Crossfire tokens. So you lose those strats as well. So that's something to keep in mind, too, if you want to mix. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of people that are mixing. If you are going to mix, you're probably going to want to take shooting with it, because the geniuses are called... They cover the close combat with a Crossfire fine. You lose some of the like fight last and ignore Overwatch, which sucks, but I get when people want to do that. But GSC now, the point is that they are actually a powerhouse on their own. They don't need that. Then even the Patriarchs now with a 4-up invul, like went from a 5-up to a 4-up. That's a big deal. The amount of times that I've rolled 4s and been sad because I didn't give them the plated cog relic. It was just too many to count. But now, I don't know. I feel really good about all this stuff.
Can I ask a question
real quick? Yeah, go for it.
So a lot of players will mix GSC and Tyranids. Do you think that you're going to see a lot of mixing coming up now that the new book is out?
Yes, you are definitely going to. Because right now, especially Leviathan, Tyranids are still really good. Hive Guard are still really good. Devil Gaunts are still really good. You're you're definitely going to see it. A lot of people are still going to mix them for sure. Because the blips, the only difference now is before, a lot of the Tyranid players would take them for blips just to keep out Alpha Strikes. Now you'll probably see them take some Close Combat in them as well. Probably some Twisted Helix stuff. I think you're going to see a lot of Twisted Helix mixed with some Tyranids, to be honest.
It's been a topic for us also.
Mm. Yeah, I sat back with the guys I've been playing with, who are very good players, and we were discussing, does this army just get better with six Hive Guard in it? And we're discussing the pros and cons of what you lose and what
hard
you get.
To say
and
no. Like,
it kind of, from where Hive Guard are right now, with they're still having the ability to double shoot, which we're assuming they're going to lose in a future update, because just about everybody else is losing it. We were like, you're exactly right, Paul. It's hard to say that they don't just get more than they lose. So you lose crossfire, you lose exposed, but you gain the single best no line of sight shooting option in the game in an army that doesn't want to run out and contest the middle of the table and, like, you know, try and bully or go, you know, meet to meet, you know, try and get into a melee. You want to hit and either not care about if you die because you're gonna, or not be there when they're trying to hit you back. And so having that option, adding that in, it does a lot for the app.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah. Please consult your conscience should you decide to do that to your friends.
Yeah, because it's, like I said, Twisted Helix is definitely the one that you're going to be bringing with Tyranids if you do it, because you're bringing Hive Guard, you're bringing Tyranids, like, you're just doing that. And something to point out too is that one of the biggest, I think we talked about this in the last time I was on your show too, one of the biggest ways to deal with Hive Guard is flyers. But the way that the blips are now worded, you cannot pass through them, through 9 inches of them anymore. So you can't fly over them. So you can't get to the back line on turn one.
Yes. So it used to be, so one of the great things about blips, yeah, of course, you could never move within 9 inches of them. So there was a great way of insulating your army from being alpha struck, so to speak. You could just, you literally could not get nuked off the table turn one, because you could always readjust from the blip once in your deployment zone. As those people who may not know what blips are, this is a relatively new army. There's only been two Gene Stealer books. They came out in 7th edition. They were very new to the game then. They had a lot of hobby lag on them as well, because you needed a lot of units to run the army, a lot of models, and it was a brand new range.
Big fat units.
Units. Exactly right. And 8th edition, they got an extremely powerful book, like a very powerful. Once again, I like this book, a very deep codex that was really exciting for a lot of people. But then they flew a little close to the sun.
Yeah, they flew too close to the sun. Like, when they first came out, I picked up all the new models at LVO, and I went to the Barry Bash Major in Canada 2 weeks after LVO, when the book hadn't, it came out the week before, but we got permission to play it. So I'd never played the army before, and I won that. Like, I got best overall. So
there you go.
They flew too close to the sun.
So an alternate way of deployment of concealing the units, you don't have, your opponent may not know what they're getting close to or what you actually have deployed in that spot.
Yeah, so you can put out any of your units could be any of those blips at any time. Like if you go first, you do it before you move, obviously. If your opponent goes first, you reveal them after they're finished moving. So you can actually manipulate it. If you play GSC, it's something you have to perfect, but the idea with your blips, basically, if your opponent goes first, you mitigate their turn.
Yeah.
Unless, like, aside from out of line of sight shooting, it is the most powerful mechanic in the game, in my opinion. It is ridiculous. People underestimate how strong deployment is in the game. Yeah. Blips are so strong.
They have honestly done a very good, GW has done a very good job in making GSC, like, because they could really just be, like I said, like spicy guardsmen. Because intents and purposes, that's what they are. They are underhivers. They are the populace of a world. They could just be really boring. But they've gone out of their way and done a lot of work to make them feel like a one-of-a-kind army. And they're one of the most unique playing and feeling armies in the game. And I think they're very exciting. So they're like orcs to me. You know how when you play against orcs, you, like, even if you're getting it handed to you, usually you're having a good time.
Yep.
GSC, I've never really not enjoyed playing GSC. Not in that it's all, you know, sometimes they were really tricksy and really hard to handle, but that's what I loved about it. I loved that they always had another trick to pull. I always had something to learn playing against GSC.
And you're also taking away models. You know, you're firing exactly with basic weapons, and they're picking up stuff.
Yeah.
That's the big thing I find with a lot, especially the army that I was playing before, my competitive army of GSC. People never really got upset or salty when they lost, because usually, like, I don't win by a lot of points. I'll win because I'm keeping ahead where I need to keep ahead, but and they're killing everything. So they feel great. Like, yeah, I'm kicking your butt right now, but you know, points wise, I'm still ahead. So they feel good about it. And that was something that was nice. Now, when they first came out, that was not the case. When they first came out, I came in from Deep Strike and tabled them. That was, was not fun.
3 inches away. Now this unit's six inches away. I get my charges off. I do this. And and I made this other charge, you know, because I wasn't going to fail the last two. It was,
that was
rough. So a couple things that also have changed. I believe the psychic powers, the Broodmind discipline has changed.
Yes, they did change a little bit. So some of them got better. Some of them got worse. Some of them went sideways. And I think that all of them are actually good changes. Now, Mass Hypnosis, a lot of people, GSC players, were complaining about the change to it, but because it lost the minus one to hit. So before it gave minus one to hit, no Overwatch, and fight last. Now it is fight last, and I believe it's still no Overwatch.
Subtract one from the attacks characteristic of the model.
That's what it is, sorry.
And in the fight phase, the unit is not eligible to fight until all eligible units from your army have done so.
Yeah, that's what it is. Subtract one attack from the unit.
And you fight last, so you got less models.
And you fight last.
And less attacks.
It's so good.
Yeah, and mind control is probably the last thing we'll talk about before we wrap this episode up. Malediction mind control has a warp charge value of 6. It manifests as like one enemy unit within 18 inches invisible to the psyker until the start of your next phase. Each time a model in that unit makes an attack, subtract 1 from the attack's hit roll. If the result of the psychic test was equal to or greater than the unit's leadership characteristic, subtract 1 from that unit's leadership characteristic and subtract 1 from combat attrition test taken for that unit.
So basically, mind control went from I'm taking a Magus specifically so I can have mind control and mind control your Castellan when I need to I'll take it
take
if I have an extra slot.
Yeah.
To take control and shoot it. Yeah. I'll take a Magus. I'll take mind control if I have an extra slot spell that I don't need double up on, like Might from Beyond or Mass Hypnosis. It got hit pretty hard. To be fair, mind control was pretty.
It was a bit of a fun sponge, I think, before. Yeah.
It was pretty strong. So I'm not like, obviously I'm sad that it's gone, but I get it.
Oh, so we've all really barely scratched the surface of this book. Yeah. As you're not talking too many, but much about the combos, not even talking about how you even build. We haven't even talked about how you actually build a real army list because the units are so exciting. The individual pieces are so exciting.
Yeah. We kind of reverse engineered this whole thing, didn't we?
You kind of have to. Like, the only way I could even start building my army is I had to start with my old competitive list and translate it into this new codex.
Figure out how many points you're really over under.
Just start adding in some spices as I tested it out, you know, because it actually works really well, too. That's if you've been playing the same list for a while, whenever you get a new codex, you usually plug that in first off just to kind of see how it feels and then go from there.
Yeah. So last week we mentioned that we were going to cover some nuanced things from the Custodes book, and we'll do that next week. Same with this. If there's anything that you're interested about, you know, learning out of this book, or maybe, you know, what are some cool combos or maybe list choices to start if you're just getting into it, hit us up, you know, either, you know, through the website or on Twitter or Instagram, and let us know if there's something you want to know about. And we'll be covering that and the Custodes stuff in the next episode. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe. You leave us a 5-star review. Those are especially everyone that's done it in Spotify. That's a new thing. Thanks a lot for that. And folks that are doing it in Audible as well. Basically anywhere you can leave some 5-star reviews, we really appreciate it. That's like one of the easiest ways to interact with the show. And maybe someone else picks up on that you've done it and they listen as well. Folks, thanks for joining me this week.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I always love talking about GSC. Bring me on anytime.
Oh, man. This is one of those to where we didn't even get like this. Again, there's a want to have you on again. There's especially when we start and you're really dealing with the, like, if you just love the faction, how do you adapt with it over time? That's something I think would be a great topic for a show.
And for sure.
Have you back on to talk about that. Adam, Tanya, is always a pleasure.
I wouldn't miss this for the world.
Always a good time, guys.
We'll see y'all next week.
I don't know what they said, but I already subscribed. You better do it too.